Peace in Our Time, Episode 3. January 1942. Well over a year since Britain was occupied by Nazi Germany. The saloon bar of the Shy Gazelle, near to closing time. Chori Bannister is drinking with Bobby Paxton, a sleek young man of pleasant appearance but somewhat repellent personality. Gladys Mott, that's her. She's drinking with a German soldier. She's dressed like a... Well, you can imagine how she's dressed. In the corner, Herr Huberman and his wife. They're clerks in one of the ministries. Near to the door is Alfie Blake, who looks like a ticket tout. He's reading a sporting paper and trying to make his glass of beer last as long as possible. Enter. Janet Braid. We've met her before.
Hello, Mama. Hello. I thought you weren't going to turn up.
Dolly Brand and I went to a film. It went on for hours, all about Frederick the Great.
An unpleasant character, I always thought.
I'm not at all sure that that isn't subversive propaganda, dear.
Practically every word that falls from my lips is subversive propaganda, I find. What do you want to drink?
What is there?
No whiskey, no gin, very little beer and some curious rum.
Very little beer sounds safest.
I think Fred would rather you had the rum. He's hoarding the beer to the last drop.
All right.
Fred, a rum for Mrs. Braid?
Right then. Good evening, Mrs. Braid.
Good evening, Fred. That girl seems to find life in occupied England quite hilarious.
Now, Gladys is in good spirits tonight. She's had a windfall.
What sort of windfall?
Well, her steady, you know, that stout gent from Hamburg who runs that factory I can't pronounce the name of, he's been over to Paris for a trip and brought her back a packet of stuff, scent and stockings and whatnot. She's on top of the world.
Yes, and what a world. Cheers, Alma. Thanks.
Hello, Janet. I wanted to see you.
What a surprising statement, Chorley. I am overwhelmed.
Come and join us for a minute.
Must I?
Please, bring a drink. Yeah, do sit down. It's to do with Bobby here.
Hello.
Hello.
Small favour.
Oh, yes.
Now, you know Grant Madison, don't you?
Yes.
Is it true that he's written a new play and is going to reopen His Majesty's with him?
I don't know. I haven't seen him for ages.
I'd like to be in it.
Oh, really?
Do you think you would help?
Why don't you ring him up yourself? He's in the book.
I gave him a bad review in Forethought for the show he was doing before the occupation.
Chorley's never been forgiven.
You're putting me rather on the spot, Chorley. I really don't want to appear disagreeable, but you see...
I suppose he's on your blacklist, is that it?
No, not exactly. Let's say my grey list. But I don't approve of the way he's behaved. I certainly don't approve of his reopening His Majesty's.
Well, I see no reason why he shouldn't, and every reason why he should. The theatre has got to go on.
That's right.
Actors and scene designers and musicians have to earn their living.
Yes, I know all that. This is a personal feeling.
Oh, I really think, Janet, that you carry your censorious attitude too far. But I'm not going to lose my temper with you. If only I could make you see that to accept circumstances without prejudice and to adjust yourself accordingly is far more admirable and helpful than stubbornly wallowing in a morass of archaic abstract idealism.
My son died for that archaic abstract idealism.
Rubbish. Forgive me, Janet, but that really is sentimental rubbish. Your son died because he was young and adventurous and liked flying through the air at breakneck speed and pitting his wits and fighting skill against the enemy.
I don't think he wanted to die.
Well, I'm not decrying his courage. He accepted the risk at the outset. Thousands of young men did likewise. But it is highly inaccurate to imagine that either he or they did it for dear old England, or Nelson, or Magna Carta, or good Queen Bess.
You're very intelligent, Chorley, extremely articulate and quite inexpressibly silly. The assurance with which you talk nonsense is quite remarkable. But to get back to the point at issue, you want me to introduce a friend of yours to a man who was once a friend of mine and of whom I now most strongly disapprove.
Well, it's that high and mighty disapproval of yours that's the point at issue.
My disapproval isn't high and mighty. It's carefully considered and, according to my personal view of the general situation, completely logical.
Hasn't it occurred to you that your personal view might be swayed by hysteria rather than logic?
No, Chorley, I'm not the hysterical type. If I had been, I should have slapped you violently in the face 2 minutes ago.
No, no, really, Janet, I see no point in continuing this ridiculous squabble.
It's neither ridiculous nor a squabble. Let me make myself clear. Grant Madison and others like him epitomise acceptance and defeat. He did nothing particularly shameful at first, beyond a rather unbecoming eagerness to prance onto the stage in front of his conquerors at the earliest possible moment. It was a little later that he began to slip. There was that Christmas broadcast, you remember, quite innocuous in itself. But he happened to be introduced and signed off by Lord Haw-Haw. Then there was that little supper party at Cheerer's, admirably publicised, at which Herr Ribbentrop was present. These are just some of the more obvious reasons for my disapproval of him, Chorley, and I disapprove of you for exactly the same reasons. I think that is all my mounting hysteria permits me to say at the moment. Alma?
Yes, Janet?
I'm not staying.
You're not? Very well, then I'll go with you.
Oh, George! Liar! How good to see you.
Evening, Chorley.
Evening, Chorley. Hello, Bobby.
Hello, my dear.
Excuse me, Liar.
Oh, we're off.
God for Harry, England and St. Agnes.
What on earth has happened?
My dear, you've missed quite a scene.
Oh, what a shame. Tell me more.
Well, yeah, be quiet, Bobby. It was only poor Janet strangling herself with her old school brassiere. It's made of two Union Jacks tied together. Now, you know Grant Madison, don't you, George?
Of course I do. Why?
He's reopening His Majesty's with a new play, and there's a wonderful part in it for Bobby. You wouldn't like to be a deer and suggest him for it, would you? I don't, because he spits venom every time he sees me.
All right, Chorley, I'll call him up.
Oh, I was always devoted to you, George.
That calls for a drink. We all have our price, you know.
What do you want?
I want a clear and exquisite dry martini made with Gordon's gin and flavoured with lemon peel. But I'll settle for a rum and synthetic pineapple juice.
Liar?
The same, darling, I'm afraid.
Bobby?
Why not? We can only die once.
Nora, four of those repellent rum cocktails, please.
Four rum cocktails, yes, Miss Pennister.
Hi, Hitler.
Hi, Hitler. Hitler.
Good evening, Frau Huberman. Good evening, Herr Huberman. And good evening to you, Mr. Shaddock. I am sorry to inconvenience you. This is merely a routine matter. Ausweise. Good evening, Mrs. Shaddock.
Good evening.
Would you care for a drink, Mr. Letcher?
Oh, no, thank you, not at the moment. Is there anyone in the public bar, Miss Shaddock?
Yes, one or two.
Will you please tell them to stay where they are until I've checked up?
Stay where you are, boys. Robin Hood's here with his merry men.
Thank you.
Not at all. Anything to oblige.
You. Me.
Identity card?
Yes, I'm looking for it. Strike me if I haven't gone and lost the bloody thing.
Tried all your pockets?
Tell them who I am, Fred, for God's sake.
He's all right, Mr. Richter. He's Alfred Blake, one of our steadies. I've known him for years.
Nevertheless, he will have to produce his identity card.
I had it on me when I came out. I swear I had.
Try looking in your map.
My map? Oh, got it. Thanks, Dory. Oh dear, gave me quite a turn. You are Cox.
Do you do this in every pub in the district?
Yes, but not regularly, just every now and then.
And what do you hope to find?
We don't hope to find anything or anyone particularly. As I said before, it is merely a matter of routine.
So how's the war going?
Do you not listen to the radio or read the newspapers?
Yes, darling, that's why I'm asking you.
I am flattered if you think that I know more than the public information services.
You might say more.
Oh, I doubt it. Albrecht can be very evasive.
Are you sure you won't have a drink?
Do you think that might loosen my tongue?
Could be.
Very well, I'll have a gin and water, please.
I'm afraid we haven't got any gin.
Not even for special customers?
No, only rum and fruit juice, like what they're having.
All right, that'll do. Might be able to remedy the gin situation for you.
Very kind of you, I'm sure.
A small amount, at any rate. Enough for you to put aside for Mr. Bannister, Mr. Bourne, Miss Vivian, and even me.
Special customers.
Exactly.
Well, you see, Mr. Richter, it's like...
Don't argue, Fred. It's very kind of Mr. Richter to suggest it.
Yes, but you see, I wouldn't like to be unfair to the public.
Don't be so tediously upright, Fred. There's a dear.
We really couldn't do it, I'm afraid, Mr. Richter, but thank you very much all the same.
I quite understand.
Really, Nora, I think you're being both tactless and silly.
It's a question of principle, Mr. Bannister.
Would you have felt the same about it if I had been an Englishman? I'm curious to know.
If you'd been an Englishman, you wouldn't have made the suggestion.
You wouldn't have been able to get the gin either.
Would you be kind enough to answer me a question, Mr. Shaddock?
What is it?
You, I take it, represent a certain class in this country. Shall we say the middle class? That is so, is it not?
I'm a publican. That might mean any class.
Don't be so tiresome and obstructive and suspicious, Fred. Mr. Richter isn't trying to trap you.
How do I know?
Let the gentleman ask his question, Fred.
The question is this. In your opinion, how long will it take ordinary, decently educated, hard-working people like yourselves to be reconciled to the inevitable?
Inevitable? How do you mean?
Oh, into the fortunes of war and superior equipment, determination and power, my country has taken possession of yours, and will remain in possession for many years, possibly forever. This is inevitable.
Is it?
Obviously.
Do you think that our dominions overseas and our friends in America are going to allow you to occupy this country indefinitely?
They would have no choice in the matter. Most people in the United States are not in the least concerned as to whether Great Britain survives or not. And what your dominions could achieve, those that is that remain your dominions, is negligible. So, Mr. Shaddock, just how long, in your opinion, till people like yourself become reconciled to the situation?
Never, Mr. Richter. Nor our children after us, nor their children's children.
Admirable. That is exactly what I hoped you would say. That is just the quality in the British that we Germans have always saluted. That infinite capacity for holding true to an idea. We too believe utterly and completely, individually and collectively, in our idea. We believe that it is our destiny to rule the world, and by doing so, make it a better place. We are also, Mr. Shaddock, a great deal more intelligent than your countrymen would give us credit for. You, for instance, I am sure were convinced that when we invaded and conquered your country, we would immediately embark on a considered program of organized murder, rape, pillage, and destruction. Is not that so?
Yeah.
Have we done so?
Not yet.
And why do you suppose we have been so restrained?
I should think you were waiting to see which way the wind blows.
Not at all. We know that already. Our policy in this country, contrary to all expectations, is essentially a friendly one. In that lies the genius of Hitler. The psychological intuition which enables him not only to dominate the human mind, but to understand the human heart as well. Believe me, the Führer is fully aware of the inherent greatness of this nation.
Very nice of him, I'm sure.
Doris.
The Führer believes that the spirit of this country is indestructible. He believes, in spite of what you said just now, Mr. Shaddock, that ultimately, in so many years, Great Britain will become reconciled to the inevitable. Not through any weakening of her spirit, but through the strengthening of her innate wisdom and common sense. As soon as that innate wisdom and common sense reasserts itself, as soon as you are willing to renounce your imperialistic convictions and cut your losses sensibly and courageously, then we can stand firmly together, your country and mine. We have so much in common and combine to drive the evil forces of Jewry and communism from the face of the earth.
That was a very excellent speech, Mr. Richter.
Do you believe it, Mr. Bourne?
The important point is, Fred, that Mr. Richter believes it.
It's rather a shock, isn't it, Fred, to be made to realise that we in England haven't got the monopoly of ideals.
Do you think that what the gentleman said just now represented an ideal?
It's an intelligent and consistent policy for the future of civilisation.
There are a lot of Jews in England, Mr. Richter, and lots of communists too. What's going to happen to them?
The latter will change their views, the former will be liquidated or deported.
Liquidated?
A certain amount of ruthlessness is unavoidable when the end justifies the means.
I knew there was a catch in it. Last orders, please.
Good night, Mr. Shaddock.
Good night, Mr. Richter.
Still standing to attention in the public, Mr. Richter. You can go through the kitchen or round by the street door. Whichever you like.
Thank you, Mrs. Shaddock. Good night.
Sleep tighty.
The end of the bar. Here, Zen.
I think, Fred, that your attitude was a little unwise.
You're at liberty to think anything you choose, Mr. Bannister. Time, gentlemen, please.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Mr. and Mrs. Huberman.
Good night, Fred.
Good night, Alfie.
Time to go, Louise.
Good night, Laura.
Yeah, that's
nice. Hi, Alfie. Hi, Alfie.
Hi, Alfie. Oh, my foot.
I shall ring you up in the morning, George, and remind you about Grant Madison. Come on, Bobby.
Have they finished the round-up in the public, Doris?
Yes. Everybody's gone. Except Nipper.
Shut down, then, and do the till.
Righto, Dad.
Come on, Lyre, before Fred throws us out.
Would you like a nightcap, Mr. Bourne?
No, I think we'd better go, really. Lyre's got to run through her new numbers, and she's on at 11.
Just one? I'll keep this put by for special customers.
You wily old hypocrite, Fred.
Heil Gordon.
Nice thing if his nibs comes back and catches us red-handed. I better lock the door. You don't mind leaving by the mews, do you?
Of course not.
Excuse me.
I'm afraid you're too late. It's after hours.
Please, can you tell me where I can find Mr. and Mrs. Granger? I've been to their flat. They're not there.
Who are you?
I'm their son. I've escaped. Escaped from the camp.
Oh, good heavens.
Lock the door, Nora. Quick. Doris, draw the curtains.
What are we going
to
do?
He's out like a light. Give me some rum, Fred.
Don't let me loosen his collar.
Here. Thanks.
I wonder if anyone saw him come in. There's nobody about.
He probably waited until the coast was clear, Doris. You'd better fetch Dr. Venning. Won't take a minute. Go by the back way.
Where does he live?
Just at the bottom of the mews.
Fred, we must be careful.
Dr. Venning's all right. Go on, Doris, hop it.
Righto, Dad.
There's more wrong with him than just a faint. Look at his wrists. He's starved and exhausted.
Oh, I don't like this, Fred. Really, I don't. It's dangerous.
We can't turn him out, Nora. No. You know we can't.
Oh, I think he's coming round.
It's all right, son. Take it easy.
Let's lift him up. Help me, Fred.
Careful.
There. That's better.
Here, sip some of this.
Thanks.
Oh, I'll run and put the kettle on. A cup of tea will do him more good than that stuff.
Mr. and Mrs. Granger, where are they?
They've probably gone to the pictures. They'll be home later on. Did anyone see you come in?
No. I hid in the doorway opposite. It was quite dark. Nobody saw me.
Good.
What the hell are we going to do with it?
We'll have to let the Grangers know somehow or other.
Be a bit tricky for them, won't it?
We'll think of something.
A bit of bread and butter and a sausage.
I shouldn't give them anything to eat until the doctor comes.
Doctor, I don't want to see no doctor.
Jay, relax, son.
No, really. Don't let a doctor see me. He might...
Is your head hurting you?
No. That is... Oh, please, I don't want to see no doctor.
Now, shut up now. There's a good boy and just do what you're told. The doctor's all right. He's a friend. Nobody's going to give you away.
He's here. Come in, Dr. Venning.
Oh, good evening, Dr. Venning.
Good evening, Fred. Hello, Nora.
This is Mr. Bourne and Miss Vivian.
How do you do? Well, my boy. Feeling a bit better?
Yes. Thank you, sir.
What's the bandage for?
Nothing, sir, that is... Nothing much. I just fell off a motorbike and grazed my face.
I'd better have a look at it.
It's nothing, sir, really.
Would you rather I didn't look at it?
Yes, sir, if you don't mind, sir.
Very well. We'll leave it for the moment and have a look at the rest of you. Do you think you can stand up?
Yes, sir.
Good. Now, I'm just going to very gently move your head to the right... And back the other way. Walk over to the bar in the back, will you?
Yes, sir.
Good boy. Now, sit down again. Would you like a cup of tea?
Yes, sir.
I'll go and get it, Doctor. The kettle's on.
When did you last eat?
Yesterday morning.
Eat a bit of bread.
Thank you, sir.
Go easy. You can have some more presently. How about that drink you promised us, Fred?
Oh, righto, I forgot. Would you like one, Doctor?
Sorry? No thanks.
Anything with it?
Good God, no, that would be sacrilege.
I don't think there's much wrong with you. Beyond exhaustion and malnutrition. But I can't say for certain until you let me see what's under that bandage.
I'm all right, sir. Really, I am.
I think you'd better tell us what happened. You can trust us. Nobody will give you away.
I escaped.
When?
3 days ago.
Where from? Which camp?
Stalag 23, the Isle of Wight. The one between Ryde and Cowes.
What did they put you in for?
I was in the RAF ground stuff. At the beginning, when we were all interned at Beaconsfield, I tried to escape. I had 3 tries, but each time they caught me. Then they moved me to the Isle of Wight.
Have they beaten you? Ill-treated you in any way?
Not lately. I tried to escape again, and they caught me.
What did they do to you?
They hurt my feet, and they hurt my hands, and they...
How did you get away this time?
There was a weak place in the wire. 3 nights ago, we got out on our stomachs and crawled down to the beach. A pal of mine and I. There was a broken bit of telegraph pole lying high up in the grass. We pushed it out and swam. And when we was halfway across, my pal gave up. I tried to help him, but it wasn't any good. I got ashore, hid in the farmyard. Then I was found by the lady that owned the farm. It was her that gave me the bandage for my head.
What about the motorbike?
There wasn't any motorbike, sir.
Tea's up. There's some saccharin in the saucer if you fancy it.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
All right. Go on. The lady at the farm...
She gave me a lift. Dropped me off somewhere near Fareham, I think it was. Then got a bus as far as Kingston. And walked from there to Mum and Dad's flat. When I found that they weren't in, I came here. I knew this place because of Mum and Dad writing to me about it.
Now then, off with that bandage.
All right, sir.
Oh, my God. Poor kid.
Is this what they did to you?
Yes, sir.
KG. What does it mean?
Kriegsgefangener. Prisoner of war. Oh.
Difficult to cover up.
I should have said impossible.
The bandage will serve temporarily, but not for long. It's too dangerous.
What are we to do, Doctor?
He'll be all right for tonight, providing they haven't traced him. But I think that the fewer people concerned with whatever happens from now on, the safer it will be for all of us.
You're quite right, Doctor. We'd better go, George.
All right. I have a feeling that we've met before, Doctor.
Really? I wonder where it could have been.
Were you by any chance with the BEF in the early months of the war?
No. I was with the RAF, here in England.
Oh, then it couldn't have been Dunkirk, could it?
Dunkirk?
Yes. It's quite a distinction not to have been at Dunkirk, really. The beaches were crowded with people one knew.
What are you talking about, darling? You weren't anywhere near Dunkirk.
I might have been.
Yes. We both might have been.
Good night, Doctor. I hope we shall meet again. I should like to be able to help over this business, so... If there's anything I can do, let me know. My number's in the book, and the name is Bourne, George Bourne.
Thank you. I'll remember.
Good night, Nora. Good night, Fred. Thank you for the wonderful gin.
Good night.
Good luck.
Thank you, miss.
Chin up.
You bet, sir.
I'll let you out by the back door.
Now then, on with the bandage again. What's your name?
Billy Granger.
Have you any identification papers of any sort?
No, sir. They stripped us clean when we was put behind the wire.
Any other marks or scars anywhere?
No, sir.
Now what?
Nobody else saw Billy, did they? Apart from Mr. Bourne and Miss Vivian?
No, they're all right.
Good. Now, Billy, if you put yourself in my hands completely, I can help you. But you must promise to do exactly what I tell you.
Yes, sir.
To begin with, you must give up all idea of getting in touch with your mother and father. They mustn't know anything about this. Anything at all. You're going to stay with me for tonight. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to drive you to the other side of London to a clinic. There, you'll have an operation on your face. You've been badly burnt when some petrol caught fire in Swain's garage, where you work. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
You'll stay in the clinic for several weeks. We'll think of another name for you. You must remember to talk as little as possible, even to the nurses. Are you ready to come now?
I want you to have a bit more to eat, Doctor. I could cook him something up.
No, Nora. I'll see to that. I want to get him out of here as soon as possible. Come on, Billy. Doris, pop up to the corner and see if the coast's clear.
All right. I've got to take Nipper out anyway.
Good night, son. I think you did bloody well. Good luck to you.
Good night, Billy. Take care of yourself.
Thanks. Thanks ever so much for doing all this for me.
Go on. We'll see you again someday.
Come along. Fred, Nora, I'll let you know from time to time how things go, but please never telephone me or ask questions. Good night, both of you.
Good night.
Oh, my God.
Oh, come off it, Nora. There isn't anything to cry about.
I can't help it. That poor boy.
Here, dry up. There's no sense in upsetting yourself. He'll be all right, thanks to Dr. Venning.
He'd be about the same age as Stevie, wouldn't he? If Stevie hadn't been shot down.
There, dear. Don't start about Stevie now.
I'm glad Stevie was killed. I'm glad. If he hadn't have been, he might have been tortured like that boy was. Branded with hot iron.
Shut up, Nora. What's the use of thinking things like that?
I'll be all right. It's been an evening of upsets.
Want a nip of Gordon's?
No, dear, I'm okay.
Well, that's good. There's no law against me having a nip myself.
Wouldn't mind a cigarette if you've got one.
Oh. Righto. Here.
Thanks.
Hold still.
All the same. I meant what I said just now.
What about?
About Stevie.
Now then, Nora.
I'm glad he was killed, really I am. If I knew he was alive in this country, I'd never have a moment's peace. I think I'd go balmy.
Maybe you're right. I'm not arguing about it. But do try and put the thought of him out of your mind. It only makes you miserable.
Not always it doesn't. Sometimes it makes me happy to think of him.
All right. Have it your own way. Go on up to bed. There's a dear. I'll finish the till and wait for Doris. We'll be up in a few minutes.
All right.
Here's to you, son.